Taliban hold a parade showcasing the captured American military hardware as they celebrate the US withdrawal from Afghanistan. A ceasefire takes hold in Syria's southern city of Daraa following weeks of clashes between the government forces and Western-backed militants. Also in the headlines, more than a million homes and businesses remain without electricity in Louisiana and Mississippi 3 days after Hurricane Ida hit the U.S. states. Welcome to World News from Tehran. Beginning with Afghanistan, where the Taliban have showcased some of the American military hardware they captured during their takeover of the country during the military parade. A long line of Humvees and other armored vehicles flying the white and black Taliban flags drove a highway outside the city of Kandahar. The parade was held to celebrate the exit of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. The Taliban also flew an Afghan Army Black Hawk helicopter during the celebrations. The last remaining U.S. troops left the country last Monday to end their 20-year invasion. The British Foreign Secretary has admitted that the intelligence failure led the government to believe the Afghan capital, Kabul, wouldn't fall to the Taliban by the end of the year.
The central assessment that we were operating to, and it was certainly backed up by both the JIC and the military, is that most likely the central proposition was that given the troop withdrawal by the end of August, you would see a steady deterioration from that point, and that it was unlikely Kabul would fall this year. That was the central assessment.
Raab was addressing an emergency session of the Foreign Affairs Committee. He said Britain may need to develop its own capabilities for specific military missions overseas without the United States. He made the remarks in reference to the US decision to withdraw its troops from Afghanistan and leaving the UK with no viable alternative coalition. The government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson has come under fire by parliamentarians over its handling of the UK's withdrawal of Afghanistan. Ahmed Kabello says the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan has been a real disaster for Britain's image in the world.
They knew very little about the traditions, the custom, or the very setup of Afghan society. And despite the fact the Taliban would constantly remind the occupiers that you have the time, you have the watch, but we have the time, which was an indication that as soon as the occupation forces left, that they would take over and be back in charge. So these are sure-tell signs of an empire in decline. And this very public spat between the United States and the United Kingdom is also an indication that the United Kingdom is no longer as useful an ally as it once was. Now, Dominic Raab was one of the key architects and cheerleaders for Brexit, and his ambition was that he would work with a Donald Trump administration closely. But Joe Biden's administration clearly sees the UK outside of the European Union as a less useful ally than it was when it was inside the European Union. So all round, it's been a disaster, and it's been a real disaster for Britain's image on the world because it's been embarrassed by its senior partner, the United States.
US President Joe Biden announced that his country's mission in Afghanistan was over after 20 years claiming victory and a success. But many around the world think otherwise, calling the US presence there anything but a success. This, like many other American wars, shows invasion and occupation have led Washington to a dead end in its foreign policy adventures.
The United States has fully withdrawn its forces from Afghanistan to officially end 20 years of occupation. The invasion will be remembered for its colossal failures, unfulfilled promises, and a frantic final exit that cost the lives of scores of Afghan civilians and 13 US military personnel. The final US evacuation flight left Kabul Airport late on Monday, US military officials say hundreds of Americans who have been left on Afghan soil will be transported out of the country in the coming days. A Taliban spokesman says the defeat of the United States in Afghanistan was a lesson for the invaders.
The withdrawal of foreign forces is a big achievement for the Afghans and their independence. It is the day of good lesson for the aggressors that they shouldn't have invaded Afghanistan.
More than 122,000 people have reportedly been evacuated from Kabul since August the 14th, the day before the Taliban took control of the country. US President Joe Biden has come under immense criticism of his handling of the withdrawal. Nearly 90 retired US generals and admirals have called for Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin and Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley to resign for their roles surrounding the chaotic pullout. The retired flag officers proposed what they felt should have happened in the withdrawal, including not rushing the pullout and not abandoning the Bagram airbase and American weapons and military equipment in the hands of the Taliban.
The war in Afghanistan is now over. I'm the fourth president who has faced the issue of whether and when to end this war. When I was running for president, I made a commitment to the American people that I would end this war. Today, I've honored that commitment. It was time to be honest with the American people again.
Well, I don't believe the U.S. government has learned a lesson. The U.S. media certainly hasn't learned a lesson. Statements we've seen from Biden, for instance, have been that we've accomplished our goals in Afghanistan, which I think is furthest from the truth.
The war in Afghanistan, at the height of it, had about 150,000 forces from the US and its allies. At that point, they were not able to defeat the Taliban. The US cost on the war alone was estimated to be $2.26 trillion in taxpayers' money, and some say that is a conservative figure, which, by any case, will be felt by Americans for quite some time.
The US invaded Afghanistan in 2001 following the 9/11 attacks under the pretext of so-called war on terror. According to estimates, America's longest war took the lives of nearly 2,500 US troops and an estimated 240,000 Afghans, and cost around $2 trillion US dollars. Thousands of Afghan civilians were also maimed during the years. The estimated interest costs of the war are expected to top $6.5 trillion by 2050.
I think the US went in there 20 years ago, removed the Taliban, and now the Taliban is back, perhaps stronger than ever. It seems like it's an utter defeat for the United States.
The war has left Afghanistan in ruins and devastated the country's infrastructure. Just as Saigon marked the humiliating defeat of US geostrategic ambitions in Indochina after 10 years of war and conflict in Vietnam, many analysts now believe Kabul marks the same humiliating defeat in Central Asia.
You know, after the Vietnam War, there was something they called the Vietnam Syndrome. The American people didn't want to go into that kind of war ever again. And I believe we're seeing the beginning of an Afghan syndrome. The American people think it was a mistake, don't want to see it again. The trillions of dollars that went into Afghanistan could have been used to help the Afghani people or for the American people.
The botched military occupation is likely to trigger a refugee crisis in the Middle East and beyond. When it comes to Afghanistan and the wider region, Washington and its allies have proved after two decades that they have nothing to offer but misery and despair. US officials believed that a US-trained, funded, and equipped Afghan army could hold the line against the poorly trained, funded, and equipped Taliban insurgency. But after a 20-year presence in Afghanistan, they still had little or no understanding of Afghan society and the power of Taliban militants.
A Russian broker ceasefire has taken hold in Syria's southern city of Daraa, following weeks of clashes between the government and the Western-backed militants. Media belonging to both the Syrian government and the militants have confirmed the agreement. As part of the deal, Russian military police are deployed in Daraa's al-Balad, the militant-held old quarter of the city. The deal also involves the disarming or expulsion of a dozen terrorists who the Syrian government considered as a threat to the ceasefire agreement. Over the past weeks, the area has witnessed heavy fighting that led to dozens of militants and a number of soldiers being killed, and many residents in the area being forced to flee their homes. Bahraini people have staged a rally protesting against the kingdom's normalization of ties with Israel. Protesters held banners and chanted slogans stressing that normalization of ties is an act of betrayal to the Muslim world. Meanwhile, Bahrain's dissolved opposition party, Al-Wafaq, condemned the move as a treason and a disgrace. Palestine's Hamas resistance movement also slammed the move, saying the enemy should know that normalization is just an illusion, and the Palestinian people would neither forget nor forgive those who stand by the occupier. The reaction came after Bahrain sent an ambassador to Tel Aviv on Tuesday as Manama's first ever envoy in Israel. Bahrain was one of the four Arab states that normalized relations with the Israeli regime under a deal brokered by the US last year. Political commentator Michael Springman says the normalization of ties with Israel is a one-sided deal for the benefit of Tel Aviv.
The people themselves see through to the heart of the matter that it's all in Israel's interest to divide the Arab world, and they have help from the United Nations special mediator for the so-called peace process, who believes that they should help the Israelis work out an arrangement for a two-state solution. Well, the Zionists created Israel by stealing Palestine from its native people with the help of the United States, Britain, and the rest of the European countries, who simply wanted to dump their Jews into somebody else's country and get them the hell out of Europe. So it's no one has gotten anything out of it except the Israelis and some of these narrow-minded, repressive and repulsive Arab governments. They see advantages in being able to buy Israeli spyware like Pegasus to use against their own people. They see that they might get some advantages in trade and aid and tourism from the Israelis, but it's all one-sided. It's not going to make much of a difference.
More than a million homes and businesses remain without electricity in Louisiana and Mississippi 3 days after Hurricane Ida hit the U.S. states. Evacuees who fled the Category 4 hurricane before it devastated southern Louisiana are being urged not to return home yet, with power out across the region. Some areas of Louisiana are expected to be without electricity for up to a month. This can be deadly during the oppressive heat in the state. Many areas in the region still lack running water or have sewage systems that are not fully operational. Six people have been killed so far, with countless homes destroyed and towns flooded. Iran's foreign minister says the current U.S. administration is pushing ahead with its predecessor's policy of using sanctions against Tehran as leverage. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks during a phone conversation with his French counterpart, Jean-Yves Le Drian. The top Iranian diplomat noted that the Islamic Republic will never bow to such pressure. Le Drian, for his part, called for more talks about issues of common interest between the two nations. The comments come as talks aimed at reviving the 2015 Iran nuclear deal in Vienna appear to have stalled. Iran says it will return to full compliance with the accord once all other parties do so and all sanctions are removed. The Iranian army has unveiled dozens of domestically manufactured military equipment. Authorities say the move is aimed at boosting Iran's capability in electronic defense. Yusuf Jalali has the details.
Meet Alborz, Iran's latest long-range radar that can detect any hostile aerial object in any given altitude. The Iranian domestically developed radar can track 300 targets at the same time, within a range of 450 kilometers. The high-tech equipment was unveiled on the occasion of the National Air Defense Day.
Alborz radar system is produced by our experts in Iran. It is capable of tracking any air target in high, medium, and low altitudes. Nothing can escape from this powerful radar, and even radar-evading aircrafts would be caught in the net of this advanced new radar.
Alborz radar was unveiled along with over 80 other indigenously built military hardware. Iran says the new equipment will significantly boost Iran's capability in electronic defense. And this, they say, was achieved despite all-out sanctions imposed by the U.S. against Iran's defense sector.
Despite all the restrictions and sanctions imposed on our country over the past four decades, we have managed to turn the threats into opportunities and build up our own arms arsenal. And the wide range of military hardware that you witnessed today are a result of the pressures imposed on us by our enemies.
The National Air Defense Day marks the formation of the Islamic Republic of Iran's air defense as a separate force in 2008, when it split from the country's air force. The military force says it possesses all the essential arms needed to defend Iran's skies, and 100% of the equipment, they say, are made indigenously. Iran's air defense says the country's skies are safer than ever with its homegrown military equipment. Officials here say they owe this to four decades of U.S.-led arms embargoes that have prompted Iran to stand on its own feet and become self-sufficient in the defense industry. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight. The U.S. Education Department has initiated investigations into five states whose prohibitions on universal mask mandates in schools may run afoul of civil rights laws protecting students with disabilities. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Erica Green and Daniel Slotnick. The piece is titled, "The U.S. Education Department is investigating five states over their mask mandate bans." The U.S. Education Department has initiated investigations into five states whose prohibitions on universal mask mandates in schools may run afoul of civil rights laws protecting students with disabilities, federal officials announced on Monday. The department's civil rights head wrote to state education leaders in Iowa, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah, notifying them that the department's Office for Civil Rights would determine whether the prohibitions are restricting access for students who are protected under federal law from discrimination based on their disabilities and are entitled to a free, appropriate public education. The investigations make good on the Biden administration's promise to use the federal government's muscle, including civil rights investigations and legal action, to intervene in states where governors and other policymakers have come out against mask mandates in public schools. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, recommends that everyone in schools should wear face masks regardless of vaccination status. In the letters to state leaders, the acting Assistant Secretary of Civil Rights said the department would explore whether the prohibitions may be preventing schools from meeting their legal obligations not to discriminate based on disability and from providing an equal educational opportunity to students with disabilities who are at heightened risk of severe illness from COVID-19. The department said it has not opened investigations in Florida, Texas, Arkansas, or Arizona because those states' bans on wearing face masks in schools are not being enforced in schools because of litigation or other state action. Sydney Dixon, Utah Superintendent of Public Instruction, said in a statement on Monday that while she appreciated the federal department's efforts to protect children, she believed they have unfairly defined Utah as a state where mask mandates cannot occur. She said that the state's law left the decision up to local officials and that several counties had implemented them. She noted that the CDC, back in March, studied a Utah district as an example of how elementary schools had reopened without significant outbreaks. Oklahoma and South Carolina education officials signaled that they opposed their state's prohibitions on mask mandates. Joy Hoffmeister, Oklahoma's superintendent of public instruction, said in a statement that the State Department of Education planned to cooperate with the investigation. Oklahoma's law against mask mandates is preventing schools from fulfilling their legal duty to protect and provide all students the opportunity to learn more safely in person, she said. In a statement, the South Carolina Department of Education said that the state superintendent had repeatedly implored the legislature to reconsider a recently passed proviso on mask mandates, which it said was being challenged in courts of law. The department said it is particularly sensitive to the law's effect on South Carolina's most vulnerable students. Brian Symes, the communications director for Governor Henry McMaster of South Carolina, wrote in a statement that the federal investigation by the Education Department was another attempt by the Biden administration to force a radical liberal agenda on states and people who disagree with them. He added, under South Carolina law, anybody who wants to wear a face mask in a school setting or elsewhere is free to do so, but the governor isn't going to ignore a parent's fundamental right to make health decisions for their children. Officials in the Education Department of Iowa and Tennessee acknowledged they'd received and were reviewing their letters. Earlier this month, President Biden announced he had directed his Education Secretary, Miguel Cardona, to use the agency's broad powers to intervene in states where governors had blocked wearing of face masks in schools. Dr. Miguel Cardona has said he is particularly perturbed by prohibitions in places where the Delta variant of the coronavirus has sent cases surging. He said he has heard from desperate parents who fear sending their immunocompromised and medically vulnerable children into schools that do not have universal masking.
food for thought.
Hello everyone, and let us listen to what the martyr of Karbala, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, has taught humanity about those who pretend to have faith. People are certainly enthralled with life. Faith is only something merely licked by them. They take good care of it as long as it secures their living. But once put to the tests of tribulation, religious men are rarely found amongst them.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Times of sadness have
As-salamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah.
وإنما خرجت لطلب الإصلاح في أمة جدي صلى الله عليه وآله.
The words of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in dialogue, a special program for the month of Muharram.
صلى الله عليك يا أبا عبد الله.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the grandson of the noble Prophet Muhammad, the son of the commander of the faithful Imam Ali, the son of the Lady of Light, the esteemed Fatima. Imam al-Hussein, the beacon of light which guides towards faith and strength, the one who has eloquently said, O people, compete amongst yourselves to achieve the most commendable traits and noble character. Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the master of martyrs, these are his dialogues. The words of Imam al-Hussein in a letter in response to the letters of the Kufan.
قال الإمام الحسين عليه السلام بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم من الحسين بن علي إلى الملأ من المؤمنين والمسلمين أما بعد فإنها هانئا وسعيدا قا قدم علي بكتبكم، وكان آخر من قدم علي من رسلكم، وقد فهمت كل الذي قصصتم وذكرتم، ومقالة جلكم أنه ليس علينا إمام فاقبل، لعل الله يجمعنا بك على الهدى والحق. وقد بعثت إليكم أخي وابن عمي وثقتي من أهل بيتي، وأمرته أن يكتب إلي بحالكم وأمركم ورأيكم، فإن كتب أنه قد اجتمع رأي ملئكم وذوي الفضل والحجة منكم على مثل ما قدم علي به رسلكم وقرأت في كتبكم، أقدم عليكم وشيكا إن شاء الله. فلعمري ما الإمام إلا العامل بالكتاب والآخذ بالقسط والدائن بالحق لله والحابس نفسه على ذات الله والسلام.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. This is a letter from Hussein bin Ali to the noble men of the believers and Muslims. With regard to our subject matter, indeed, Hani and Saeed have come to me with your letters and have been the last people who have come to me with your letters. I understand that all of you have indicated and mentioned in your remark that there is no imam for us, so hurry up, perhaps Allah may direct us to the direct path and the right because of you. Hence, I have dispatched to you my brother in faith, my cousin, and the reliable person from my family members. I have ordered him to write to me about your situation, your affairs, and your point of view. Hence, if he reports to me the same view that your noblemen, your learned, and your intellectual people have written to me that I have read in your letters, then I will rush to you, insha'Allah, as soon as possible. By my life, the Imam cannot be but one who puts the Book of Allah into practice, one who is passionate about social justice, one who is devoted to the right, and one who has devoted everything for the sake of Allah. Peace be with you.
Karbala, as I step onto your sand, you capture my eyes. Karbala, I see heaven has been placed here beneath your skies.
And now let's listen to Dr. Muhammad Reza Fakhr Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, wa bi nasta'in. As well indicated, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam received many letters from the inhabitants of Basra and mainly Kufa. According to some estimates, received around 12,000 letters of invitation from the people of Kufa. Then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam in his answer indicated that in answer to the collective letters of the people of Kufa, indicated that he had certainly received the last portion of letters that Hani and Saeed had brought him from Al-Kufa, and indicated that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam asserted that he was aware that the people of Al-Kufa intended to have the most appropriate leader, but from a political perspective, first of all, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam had to be sure of the right decision and the sincerity of the people of Al-Kufa for various reasons. Because of this, Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam decided to dispatch his cousin and his confident person and to some extent perhaps his advisor, who was none but Muslim Naqil, to the city of Al-Kufa. And then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, in his answer, indicated that if Muslim ibn Aqil would report to him, that is to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, that the people of Kufa were also, sincere in their invitation to Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, and he was sure that they wanted him as their own political leader, as their leader, then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam would approach to Al-Kufa. And then Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, at the end of his letter, he indicated a very good definition of Imam. Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam indicated in his definition in that an appropriate Imam and an appropriate leader would be a person who would practice the precepts and standards of the Holy Quran, and he would distribute and practice and implement social justice, and would be always on the right path, on the path of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to the degree that he would ignore his own personal benefits and personal interests for the interests of the Islamic religion and the Muslim Ummah. Based on these standards and definitions, we can come up with a good definition of imamate and leadership from the perspective of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Please note that Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam never restricted his definitions to that specific case. Rather, they were general definitions as formulated by Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. Sallallahu alayk, Ya Husayn ibn Ali.
As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdillah.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Dialogue. We hope that you remain under the auspicious grace of Imam Husayn today and always.
A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Sama Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of the cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in the process. After all, life does find a way. A French graffiti artist has created a monumental mountaintop project to encourage a more contemplative approach to life, aiming at lifting people's spirits. The giant 1,500 square meter painting is called A New Lease of Life. It was painted on the summit of Mollison Peak in the western Swiss Alps. The 32-year-old artist says he was inspired by the likeness of childlike wonder. The mural depicts a little boy blowing bubbles in an area known for its clouds. The artist says he wanted to reflect the link between children and sky gazing.
I think we live in a world that includes anxiety, and we need a little lightness to balance it. So I believe that the clouds mean dreams and imagination. When we were kids, we liked to imagine shapes in the clouds and so on. And I believe that this is a moment where we have to breathe and also imagine the world of tomorrow with a certain lightness through daydreaming.
Saip also says he designs his creations to fit in with the environment using biodegradable paints made from natural pigments. The French artist is known for his massive graffiti works on grass that are best seen from the air. Some of his other works have adorned an impoverished shanty town in South Africa and the lawn in front of the UN headquarters in Geneva. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go toward conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Paleontologists in Egypt have discovered fossilized bones of an ancient whale that could probably walk on land and swim in water. Scientists found the skull, jaw, and some ribs and identified the parts as the 43-million-year-old ancestor of the modern whale. It's also the earliest type of semi-aquatic whale found in Africa. The whale is estimated to have been 10 meters in length, weighing over half a ton, and was likely a top predator. Scientists say the four-legged whale is a key new species that helps trace the transition of whales from land to sea. Paleontologists believe that the ancestors of modern whales developed from deer-like mammals living on land over a 10-million-year period. The fossilized remains were discovered in Egypt's western desert, which was once covered by sea. A French beekeeper has invented a unique device to keep his beehives safe after suffering a traumatic loss of 35 of them to hungry Asian hornets. The device is a one-way mechanism that baits hornets with sugary water, and once they get in through a funnel, they never come out. Originally, the trap was made of wooden crates and metal mesh, but now they are 3D printed in plastic. Dennis made his first lobster pot to catch the hornets in 2016 and now makes the traps in bulk due to growing demand. The Asian hornets are an invasive insect that arrived in France via a pottery shipment from China. The killer hornet can eat through an entire hive in a matter of hours. There is a festive occasion for a Mexican zoo amid a rare birth boom in its lion enclosure. Keepers and visitors are amazed to hear roars of three newborn cubs. The three baby lions that are trying very hard to roar were born just 2 weeks ago in Zacango Zoo. The zookeepers separate them from their mother for a few hours a day to feed them because their mother cannot produce milk. The two female and male cubs would live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. They are reported to be currently in good health.
a bunker built by the German army in France during World War II, has now been given a new lease of life by turning it into an underground guest house. A 4,300 square feet bunker located off Breton coast in northern France was originally built by Nazi troops after invading the country in 1940. The area has been the home of hundreds of such fortifications of the German army. Half of them have been buried along sandy beaches. This underground guest house now belongs to the 52-year-old bunker enthusiast. Serge Goliot says it took 18 months to dig out the buried trench and turn it into a fully functional guest house. He says an attempt was made to preserve some historic aspects during its renovation.
What is nice is to now be able to spend time here, to have dinner, to spend the night in things like this. So we adapted the bunker while preserving a certain feel. We wanted to give the building a second life, so we're not going to live in the past forever. We saved some aspects, you know, where you are. There are historic cues, but this isn't a museum either.
Colliot says many French visitors and foreigners, including Germans, have stayed in the guest house since the bunker opened a year ago. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas, such as snowy mountains, grasslands, and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other. An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of creeping plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in a sprawling city.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cake, an ideal treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Xiao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Xiao Qiji is a fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. there are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual Buddha sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of Buddha and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the Buddha will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power. An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Bornean orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The presence of extremist militant groups in Africa is providing the perfect pretext for expanding the U.S. military footprint there. The U.S. desperately needs new leadership before it bleeds another generation in an endless war. We now present you an article written by Brandon J. Weichert, the author of Winning Space, How America Remains a Superpower. The piece is titled Afghanistan Today, Africa Tomorrow, America's Saga of Failure. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. As the recent heartbreaking images from Kabul prove, the Americans have lost the war. This just a few short years after they'd lost Iraq. Like it did in Iraq in 2003, the United States went after extremist militants in Afghanistan, but it hung around for 20 years trying vainly to remake ancient Afghanistan into a protectorate of the United States. Rather than ask why these conflicts resulted in staggering defeats for the United States, America's bipartisan ruling elite appear interested only in whitewashing these catastrophic failures by switching the focus now to Africa. The U.S. is barely out of Afghanistan. Its failure is so pronounced that it is leaving many of its own citizens in that country to the tender mercies of the Taliban. And many in Washington are already seeking to replicate the pattern of failure that resulted in America's profound defeat in Afghanistan in Africa. In 2017, as the Donald Trump administration was settling into what would become a chaotic presidency, the 33rd Joint Land, Air and Sea Strategic Special Program was conducted, which included 148 students from the U.S. military's various war colleges. The war game scenario was set in the period from 2023 to 2026. It detailed a coordinated terrorist attack on the New York and New Jersey ends of the Lincoln Tunnel, killing 435 people and injuring an additional 618. A cyber attack against a nuclear power plant in Berwick, Pennsylvania, occurs as well. There are also several follow-on attacks conducted against targets throughout Africa, the Canadian embassy in Mauritania, and suicide bombings in Nigeria. It is soon determined that Al-Qaeda in Maghreb, or AQIM, is responsible for the coordinated, sophisticated wave of terrorist attacks. It should be noted that Boko Haram today is far more dangerous than Al-Qaeda in Maghreb or AQIM, though this is a distinction without much of a difference.